Hello and welcome to the Race Scene with Robin Roller Podcast. It's great to be back, everybody. I'm Josh Roller here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where the weather is slowly staying colder, and I think it's here to stay. I think the days of 75-degree sunshine and 35-degree nights are over and past us. We're just going to stick around here, 45 degrees at night and 55 degrees during the day. All right, enough about the weather. Rob is in Indianapolis, where I know it's getting, it is staying colder there. We are seeing more Indiana late November, early December weather.
Yeah, it's steadily here in the low 30s.
And what I like to call, that's what I like to call basketball weather. If there's one thing I miss about Indiana, except friends and family, it is Indiana high school basketball. It's undefeated, everybody. It is undefeated. Don't go to an NBA game. Go to an Indiana high school basketball game. Yeah.
Southport Fieldhouse, Newcastle Fieldhouse. Awesome. Gotta go to the, how many more? Oh, gotta go see at least one game at the Hoosier Gym. Because they have them every year, I think, still. They have they have games.
They have several weekends there now. They're being more active with there. And then Kokomo, Memorial Gym in Kokomo turned 75 this year.
Hey, there you go. There you go. Yeah.
There's a lot of great basketball in Indiana. All right, but this is a racing
show. This is a racing show.
This is a racing show. We have several news points to talk about, from Formula E all the way to SRX. Toyota unveiled a new NASCAR Cup car, and the featured paint scheme is dedicated to Toyota. Upshift, downshift will cover Max Verstappen, F1 Sprint Racing, Logan Sargeant, Chase Elliott, and so much more. Let's go ahead and get this thing really started in on the road, if you will, on the track. And Rob, open us up with the racing report in Formula E.
All right, let's go. Hello. This is the Rob's Racing Report. We're talking about all the news today. We're going to kind of try and breeze through it because there's quite a bit. You'd be surprised how much it is. You wouldn't believe that we're almost to December and already we've got all of this news. But starting off with Formula E, the electric formula, the 10th season of Formula E in the 2024 season will be the largest in the series history, holding 17 races across 11 race weekends, meaning 6 weekends will be doubleheaders, which now includes a doubleheader at Portland International Raceway. Oh boy! The series will also move the Italian weekend from Rome to the Misano World Circuit, Marco Simoncelli. All right, more permanent Formula E tracks. Awesome. Oh, also, they announced that the Berlin E-Prix is going to have a little bit of a different look to it. They're kind of redesigning. They're kind of redesigning the layout of the show. That, but it's still largely the same idea. But you know, it's not like it's a complete drastic difference. But it is different. How about that for some Formula E news? Now let's move on into Formula One. The FIA has formally warned Toto Wolff and Fred Vasseur for their use of F-bombs during press conferences at the Las Vegas Grand Prix. Interesting there. Next news here is Monster Energy will reportedly move their sponsorship from Mercedes to McLaren for next year onwards. So that's news that from there. So we're going to have Monster Energy sponsoring McLaren from now on. And then more on this later here in the show. Christian Horner says Lewis Hamilton once reached out to him regarding a drive at Red Bull Racing. And Lewis Hamilton says Christian Horner once reached out to him. We'll talk about that here later on in the show. More on this also later in the show. A meeting of the Formula One Commission has seen support for further changes to the sprint format to separate it from the rest of the Grand Prix weekend. Well, again, talk about that later on in the show, so stay tuned. Coming up here in the upshift downshift segment. Now we'll move on into supercars. Two names have floated around for Jack Smith's vacated seat at Brad Joe's Racing per Speed Cafe. If you have not caught last week's show yet, Jack Smith announced that he was leaving supercars as a full-time driver at the conclusion of the Adelaide 500. That was this past weekend. So he finished his last supercars performance. Actually got a top 20 out of his actual last one. I think he finished like 19th or something. So not bad for him. But anyway, Zach Best and Declan Frazier are possible replacements for Smith in the number 4 SCT Logistics Chevrolet per Speed Cafe. However, nothing has been formally announced or even hinted at from BJR. So that's definitely something we're going to have to monitor here. Who's going to take that vacated seat because nobody really expected the seat to be open here in supercars, and now it is. And we're going to get some late... The grid would have already been pretty much decided had it not been for that. But a big piece of that is because of Declan Frazier. Tickford Racing is obviously scaling back from four cars to two, and he's the odd man out right now. So they're trying to figure out what to do with him. And I guess he could take the seat, but there's some legal hangups that need to be taken care of first. So we'll definitely see what comes of there. And then some sad news here in the world of supercars. The Newcastle City Council has voted to permanently kill off the Newcastle 500. The council voted Tuesday to dismantle core sections of the track. Just one councillor voted against the measure. Some sad news there. The Newcastle 500 is gone. For the foreseeable future, they're going to dismantle most of what the track was and not be having it ever again. In IndyCar news, Errol McLaren driver Pato O'Ward will be a reserve driver for McLaren's F1 team in 2024. Congrats to Pato there for getting that done. Probably was the ride that was promised to Alex Palou, if you think about it, but anyway. And speaking of Palou, actually, I believe that Jenna Fryer put out something earlier that said that Palou was, I guess, trying to mitigate everything and pay McLaren what he owes them. So I guess he is trying to settle the lawsuit, hopefully that whole legal mess will be done soon, sooner rather than later. But anyway, that's let's impressive. Talk about... Yes, yeah, yeah. Anyway, let's move on to this next piece of news. Marshall Pruitt reports that IndyCar's next TV deal has not yet been reached and that Mark Miles is spending the winter months traveling cross-country to meet with potential partners. Also, IndyCar, this is also for Marshall Pruitt and Racer, IndyCar reportedly wants to have a quote-unquote big event similar to the Chicago Street Race or Las Vegas Grand Prix as soon as 2025. Now, this is a hinted as possibly being a race in Argentina. That would be crazy to me because that's not exactly a big event when you think about Las Vegas or Chicago. You don't exactly think of Argentina.
Not unless you're throwing a big party for South America. I'm not sure that
is,
works.
Is this track? Is the track even how close is it to Buenos Aires anyway?
I think are they talking about Rio Hondo?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it's very close. I don't. And
if you're not even going to go race where people are, then how are you going to call that a big event?
Yeah, this it's IndyCar doing IndyCar things.
Yeah, well, we all know how they work. Let's talk about their little sister, smaller series, Indy Next. In the NXT, hey, it was Tuesday night. That's why WWE NXT is on. So it's Indy Next today. NXT, excuse me. This is the fun part. This is the fun part that I get to say. I get to talk about this. The son of Dr. Jack Miller, Jack William Miller, will move up to Indy Next for 2024, driving for the team his father and former Colts kicker Adam Vinatieri co-own Miller Vinatieri Motorsports. So the son of Dr. Jack Miller is going to race full-time in Indy next year for his father's team that he, again, co-owns with former Colts kicker Adam Vinatieri. Josh, do you have any thoughts on that sentence that I just said at all?
I hope he's a race car driver and not a steering wheel holder.
I believe he is. If not, I'm sure he can take over the family business of the Carmel Dentistry, which is real. You can get Dr. Jack Miller to work on your teeth if you have the right insurance.
I was about to say, how affordable is that?
Well, it's in Carmel, Indiana, so you tell me. I mean, there's no way.
Well, there's Indiana, then there's Carmel, Indiana.
Yeah, Carmel is its own place. It is. Man, there's things I like about Carmel, and then there's things I don't like about Carmel. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Anyway, this is different. All right, we're going to talk about two wheels. So for the very small percentage of you who tune into this show for two wheels, two-wheeled news, if you do, I greatly apologize. You've been disappointed for a long time. But anyway, more on the with this later in the show as well. So this we'll talk about this as well in the upshift downshift segment. And the next piece of news as well, we got two pieces of MotoGP news that we're going to talk about. According to the race, sources in the MotoGP paddock, American team, NASCAR team, Trackhouse Racing, is heavily tipped to become the unlikely savior of Aprilia's satellite MotoGP operation for the 2024 season. And Josh, this now makes sense because this ties into the next piece of news is... because I found this interesting, I decided to talk about this. MotoGP has reportedly rejected CryptoData's RNF's 2024 entry over repeated infractions and breaches. And now, Josh, I'm going to pull up the motorsport.com article that talks about this. It was written by Megan White and Lewis Duncan, giving the authors, obviously, proper credit. The team apparently has issued a statement over the Valencia Grand Prix weekend denying reports that its place on the grid was in jeopardy. This is CryptoData RNF saying, due to financial issues. In a press conference on Saturday night, representatives of the team called the rumors, quote unquote, fake news and insisted all was well within the team. It is said that a takeover offer was rejected 2 weeks ago and that team principal Roslyn Rosali was stepping down, claiming it had been decided over a month ago due to poor financial decisions. RNF also denied owing any money to suppliers, including Aprilia. The reason why I say that is because, what did we just talk about? What is Trackhouse Racing possibly going to become the savior of this team? Crazy! I don't follow as much MotoGP as I used to, and I've always said that NBC Sports' coverage is hands down the absolute worst I've ever seen for a racing series. They tape delay these darn races. They don't air Moto3. They don't air Moto2. They don't air qualifying. When BN Sports had all of that, and I used to watch a lot of it when it was on BN Sports because you could watch the whole weekend. You could really see how the weekend progressed, and it was good. Yes, there were commercials, but who cared? You know, I enjoyed it. It was good stuff. It's bad now. It's bad. Does NBC air most of the races commercial free? Yes, they do. Congratulations to them. Good job, NBC. That being said, still don't like it. So that's the MotoGP news that we're done talking about. Now let's move on into some NASCAR news because we do have some significant NASCAR news here. Adam Stern, Motorsport.com, and other sources have reported that the next NASCAR media rights deal could come as soon as Wednesday. That is, if you are listening to the show on the day that it comes out, that is today. That is what they are saying, today, that it could come out. If you're listening to this any day other than Wednesday, this is already late, but hey, this is what we think we know as of Tuesday. The deal could come as soon as Wednesday, like I said. That would see Fox broadcast the first 14 races of the season, NBC broadcast the final 14, and then Amazon Prime and TNT splitting a 10-race summer stretch. Now, in some of the articles, it's been said that possibly this could be a split deal. So TNT would have a 5-race deal, and then Amazon Prime would take over the other 5 deal, and then it would go to NBC. Or it could be one or the other. It could be either all TNT, all Amazon Prime. Obviously, if you want my opinion, TNT is the way to go. I hope that it's TNT, because then again, everything all comes full circle. You got Fox, NBC, TNT, all is right with the world again. Everything's good and fine. Now we just need to make sure that TNT's coverage is better than what it was, and see who they get as an announcer. You know, is it Adam Alexander? Is it Alan Bestrick? Is it somebody we've never heard before? Is it Ralph Shaheen of all people? Who knows? We'll find out. And the same goes for Amazon Prime. So all of this is going to be very, very interesting to see how it develops in the future. And we're going to definitely be talking about this definitely in the New Year's special when it comes out, and because we'll probably know about this. So definitely keeping notes on that. Going forward. And then the next piece of NASCAR news here is this is just great. Fresh off of his Supercars Championship, Brody Kostecki, in case you live under a rock, Brody Kostecki won the 2023 Supercars Championship this weekend. He clinched it with Shane Van Gisbergen having a truly awful, abysmal send-off weekend. Poor guy. But Brody Kostecki could make approximately 5 race attempts with RCR in 2024. Now, I hope to God, I hope he races SVG in all 5 of those. If that ends up playing out, because I would love to see it. I would love to see those two battle it out. They won 1 year, they're racing for a Supercars title, and the next year they're both in NASCAR racing it out. Like, just come on. Don't sit here and tell me that's not the coolest gosh darn thing. Like, don't sit here and tell me that's not awesome, objectively. It is fantastic. I love seeing that. But anyway, but what's even cooler here is RCR, Richard Childress here, he wants Brody to make an oval start. So he said, hey man, if SVG is going to go out there and make some oval starts, maybe you should do it too. I'm a big fan of this. I love this Supercars invasion. I can't get enough of it, man. I love it. And, you know, next year it's going to be, you know, Brody's going to be able to defend his title. But, man, I'm just... I can't wait for SVG for next year too. I'm so excited for this. And anyway, we'll keep going here with some NASCAR news here. More on this later here in the show. NASCAR has released the top 5 drivers in voting in alphabetical order for the 3 national divisions for the most popular driver. In NASCAR Cup Series, it's Ryan Blaney, Kyle Busch, Ross Chastain, and Chase Elliott. Well, I can bet you who's going to win that one. And Kyle Larson. And then in Xfinity, it's Justin Allgaier, Josh Berry, Sheldon Creed, Cole Custer, and Josh Williams. Wow. Dude, things just keep going better for him. Anyway, and then in trucks, Haley Deegan, Matt DiBenedetto. What? What? Both of those? What? Okay. Stuart Friesen, Carson Hocevar, and Ben Rhodes. All right. All right, we'll talk about it later. I'm just kind of speechless on the trucks one. But anyway, and then finally, Toyota unveiled the new NASCAR Cup Series Camry SXE for the 2024 season and beyond. So Toyota redesigned the Camry for the 2024 model season. I'm not a huge fan of it, Josh. I'm not very big into it. I think it's going to take some getting used to.
You know what? I'm very critical sometimes of Toyota and the way they like do their model car schemes. You know what I thought it was when I first saw it? I thought someone was joking. I saw the Dodge Charger. I saw the Dodge Charger in this. Oh. So I'm really anxious to actually see it get on track and see what it looks like that way. And then I'll make my kind of my final judgment on it to see how the actual paint schemes will work.
Yeah, I mean, definitely that's what you have to do. You have to wait until the paint schemes are on it. But, man, I'm going to miss that beautiful Camry. And I don't know if I've told you this, but I definitely told my mom. I said, Ma, I think my next car, and I told my wife this too. I said, my next car is going to be a 2018 Toyota Camry. That's what it's going to be. And you can get them for good prices if you shop around. Low mileage, good prices. You can find them. They're good cars. And they're sexy as hell. I will say that, I mean, look, man, I will always say, you know, a Dodge Charger is always going to be my dream car, but man, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to afford one, okay? But a Toyota Camry, a 2018 Toyota Camry, is probably the sexiest, hands down, the sexiest, reasonably priced midsize car ever to come out, probably... since a 4-door Pontiac Grand Prix.
You won't hear any complaints from me on that one. Yeah.
I love them. And for the Pontiac Grand Prix's sake, I want to say that I will say that the car that came before, a little bit before, or maybe around at the same time, I will always also love, and this nobody will ever understand this car, and I'm going to get into the next piece of news as soon as possible, but I just have to say this. The 1997 Eagle Talon is hands down the sexiest failed car on the planet. And it is in Forza 5, and it is one of my favorites to scoot around at Brands Hatchin. That is... all I'm going
to
say.
I'll have to look that car up after the show.
It was manufactured by the Chrysler Company in the mid to late 90s, and it was discontinued in like about 97, give or take. So, but it's a very beautiful car, very, very beautiful looking, awesome car. Anyway, last piece of news here. We're going to talk about some SRX. SRX has released two more tracks that it is going to for the 2024 season. Slinger Super Speedway, Slinger Speedway, and then Stafford Motor Speedway for 2024. So we've got two tracks remaining on the six race SRX schedule for 2024 that have yet to be announced, and I guess they are taking suggestions. So anyway, Josh, I'm going to turn things back over to you because you are leading the show this week, and that has been Rob's Racing Report for today's, I guess you could say, the last weekly episode of season 5.
Well, here on to the featured paint scheme. Like we mentioned in the opening, we're going to dedicate this to Toyota. Yeah, to Toyota. And, I didn't know what to do on this one, so I just kind of went ahead and put a parameter down of your favorite NASCAR Cup Series Toyota scheme of the 2023 season. You only had 6 full-time cars. Next year we'll have 8, though. And 1 part-time. I don't know which one Rob picked, but, so he had 6 full-time cars to choose from here. And so, Rob, tell us about the one that you selected and why. What was your favorite?
Oh, my gosh, Josh. It's so simple for me. I always love these Toyota Camrys. I will forever miss this design of Camry. But the one that I really, really like this year, and again, I'm biased. I'm biased simply because this is, as I said, this is the greatest soft drink to be invented, probably since the original Coke Zero. And I will stand by that. Coke Zero is awful now since they changed it up. But Bubba Wallace drove a Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar car at Kansas in May. And I just have to say that it's a beautiful car. I love the way that these colors react to each other. I like the black on the maroon. I think the black on the maroon plus with the silver. I mean, there's not much silver on there. There's some little bit here and there. But for the most part, it's black and maroon. That's why I love the can design. The can design makes for a perfect, beautiful paint scheme. And so every time Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar sponsors Bubba Wallace, they come out with a banger paint scheme. And the reason why I say that is also because McDonald's paint scheme just was terrible this year. It was notoriously awful. The only good McDonald's paint scheme we got this year, Josh, was the Grimace and the Hamburglar. Those are the only good McDonald's paint schemes we got.
That's true.
And now, don't get me wrong.
The McDonald's paint schemes this year looked as bad as the restaurants.
Yeah, why did they go? Sorry, off topic, but why the heck did McDonald's have to go and make all of their restaurants gray?
I am going to reference several social media posts that the designs of McDonald's are going through a midlife crisis similar to millennials.
Well, probably. I mean, look, there's a McDonald's not far from my house, further down in Greenwood, and it's got a play place in it, right? So it's got like one of those McDonald's play areas, right? Big play area. But when I was a kid, I remember those looking so much more fun. And now I look at this and it's like, this doesn't look like a play area. It looks like a building. I mean, yeah, inside it looks kind of cool, but on the outside, it doesn't look nearly as fun. Because when you used to see the McDonald's with the play place, it would be all colorful letters, you know, and it would be very colorful on the outside. And now this one, I mean, I'm sure it's really cool. I'm sure kids probably love it. But from the outside, architecturally speaking and design speaking, it just doesn't look appealing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
It just doesn't look like a fun place for kids to go. It looks like a place where adults come on bring your kid to work day. Like, it looks more like an office building than a restaurant.
Yeah. Well, anyway. That's most of fast food today, though. Where we grew up, in the 90s and everywhere had this great architectural uniqueness to it. And now, today, it's like, bleh.
Yeah. Taco Bell really went downhill in that regard, aesthetically. I mean, nacho fries are still the greatest invention on the planet, but, you know, elsewhere. They went downhill aesthetically, getting rid of the 90s neon stuff. They never should have done that. McDonald's, obviously, we just talked about. Burger King. Burger King still has kind of a... Some Burger Kings still have a retro feel to them.
Some
Burger Kings. Yeah. Jack in the Box is still fun, though. I'll say that as a Jack in the Box, sponsor the show, please. Hey, Jack, sponsor the show, please. I love your... You know what I had today, Josh? I had a Cluck sandwich, I had two tacos, and I had 5 mini churros, and it was the greatest meal I had. The Cluck sandwich is amazing because the good sauce is incredible.
Still haven't had it.
They're Jack in the Boxes in North Carolina. You have told me this, and you still have not tried them.
Yeah,
Josh, I could try Cookout, do you realize that I would? I would do it in a heartbeat. Yeah, but I don't have any Cookouts over here.
I'll tell Mr. Reeves to get some Cookouts in Indiana when I see him next summer at the shootout.
I would very much appreciate that because I am a big fan of any restaurant that serves mini corn dogs.
They have good hush puppies too.
Yes, hush puppies are quite wonderful, but I'm more thinking about just getting a bunch of mini corn dogs. That's why I used to like A&W so much, because A&W, you could get a bunch of mini corn dogs.
Gosh,
as like A&W. A side.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get a draft root beer and just so many mini corn dogs. It was expensive, but it was so good. Josh, go ahead and give me your feature pain scheme because this is horrible what I've done.
Well, we've both gone with drinks, and I'm going with Denny Hamlin's Coca-Cola scheme that he ran in Atlanta's July weekend. I can't talk. No, the chrome numbers I really like. I saw this car in person, and this car in person is even better than photography can give. And there's some great crisp pictures out there. I love the chrome numbers on it. And I love the car's can designed look to it. It just, everything about this car is brilliant. And I actually wish he drove it a few more times because it is great. And I also wish we could get a diecast made of it. But unfortunately, that's not in Coca-Cola's rights. They don't allow that. So... Anyways, great car, great car, and it was tough not to pick a 2311 scheme, I will say that, out of there. How many races did we have this year for NASCAR? We had a total of 76 races in the Cup Series, and they ran, 70 different paint schemes, it feels like. 2311, they had a lot of multiple ones, but they rarely missed. McDonald's ones were a miss, though. But everywhere else was pretty solid. But Denny Hamlin's Coca-Cola scheme gets my vote and nod. I like that a lot. Also, low-key honorable mention, Ty Gibbs' black Interstate batteries car scheme that he drove. That one was honorable mention. All right, so on to the upshift downshift segment here, the main bulk meat of our show. We are in the center of the sandwich now, folks. The debate section, upshift, we agree with the question, statement, or piece of news. Downshift means we disagree. We also throw in a neutral if, for any number of reasons. But most of the time, we do find a way to shift either up or down. And sometimes we even break the shifter, if not the entire transaxle. So we'll see how this today goes with question one, Formula Sprint Race should award its own champion. Do you upshift or downshift this, Rob?
Oh, this is a very interesting question. I don't want to say that I dislike it because I don't necessarily dislike it. But I still believe that the sprints should serve their purpose in a way that, you know, is meaningful. And right now, they're not. They're not serving that purpose. They're entirely meaningless. So I would say, you know, yeah, I think there should be an added incentive to try and really do something during the sprint races. But again, like I've said many, many times before, You have to invert the starting lineup in the sprints. You have to. You have to do it like F2 and F3 do it. And that you have to make it just like their race weekends. I mean, you can't think that it's going to be any different. It's just going to be, if you don't do it that way, then it's just going to be another, you know, easy champion for Max Verstappen or whoever has the best car that year. You know, it's not really going to be an interesting or compelling championship like I know that they want it to be. You know, if you do it like that and say, okay, well, if you've got the best car, you got to start 10th. You know, now try and win it. And in all honesty, it'll be fun, but it won't be the end of the world for them because the big thing is, it doesn't matter because the Grand Prix is what we're trying to win. You know, if we win the sprint, if we could win the sprint, great, but the Grand Prix is what we're trying to win because we have the fastest car. You know, I think the sprint races would make for a more intriguing championship. So that's my opinion, and that's why I'm going to ultimately have to say I upshift that.
The sprint races need to have meaning, like you said, absolutely. I think they can award their own champion, yes, so I upshift. At the same time, mean something. I would almost say they need to, in F1, here's this. If they, you couldn't phrase this to the people in F1 and the FIA because they automatically shoot it down because they would look at it as an inferior form of motorsport when in reality all these races are more entertaining than F1. They need to adopt American dirt style, dirt track racing style here where they, you get so many points for qualifying. And then you run your race, and you get so many more points for how you finish in the sprint race, but you invert the field. So, let's say you get 200 points first. Let's say whoever wins the pole gets 200 points. Okay, you're going to start on an invert, wherever that is, however they decide to invert the field. And if you were to win the race, you get another, let's say, 100 points. You know, so now you're starting on the pole for the Grand Prix, right? If you finish last and you get, let's call last 10 points or 5 points, you get 205 points. So wherever 205 puts you, as far as points goes. And if that means you are 7th on the total points, you start 7th in the Grand Prix. I mean, you got to make it worth something. And right now, it's just pointless. So, I do think you can still have your own champion on that and get the whole thing accomplished. It's just trying to get 10... Sometimes, in my opinion, they're just increasingly bozos to try to figure out what do they want to do other than watch their own bank accounts? So, anyways, we'll see. We'll see what comes about that news. Well, something else will happen. Hey, it's a third. Is this the third? Was 2023 the third season for sprint races?
I believe so.
I think 21 was the first year they had them. I mean, yeah. We're about to go into 2024 and have a fourth different sprint format style. I mean, that's the thing. This is getting worse than NASCAR in their playoffs. I said it. All right, next one here. Max Verstappen wins 8 or more Formula One World Championships. Do you upshift or downshift this, Rob?
Boy, this is a tough one. A lot of it depends. A lot of it is truthfully going to depend on how...
Well, absolutely, a lot of it depends.
Yeah, it's going to depend on how dominant that Red Bull car is. And for how many seasons the Red Bull car is going to be dominant. Because, you know, what's going to happen... This is what happens every year during Formula One. Is once the competition starts to get really, really, really good and close, the next year there's gonna be new regulations, and one team's gonna figure them out better than everybody else, and it's an entire gamble on who that team is, right? It's that everybody knows this has happened the last several iterations, Formula One. Okay, this happened, this happened. All the way back in 2012, super competitive season, 2008, super competitive season, super competitive championship, and then next year, Braun Racing wins first half of the season. You know, and not to take anything away from them, but that's just what happens, you know, and it sets things up. And then all of a sudden, Braun kind of goes away or loses their advantage. Red Bull comes through, and then Red Bull dominates. And then once the new regs come in for the hybrids, Mercedes dominates the whole time. Now, Ferrari and Red Bull had some runs up in there during different car designs and different things here and there. But then, you know, now then at 2021, obviously, Red Bull and Mercedes were on par with each other, and they were the two best cars. And it made for some really, really fun racing. And then 2022 happens, and Red Bull just figures things out better than everybody else. And now Verstappen is going to just ride that into the sun for as long as he can. I don't know how much longer Red Bull's going to have this advantage. I mean, they could have this for one more year, two more years, five more years, or they could lose it next year. Like, I don't know. But what I do know is that Max Verstappen is a really, really, really good race car driver. Okay, he's proven this time and time again. He's a fantastic race car driver, and he always will be. And I don't foresee that changing. That being said, eight titles is hard to get. I mean, Lewis Hamilton, if Felipe Massa has his way, Lewis Hamilton will have one of his seven taken away from him. I mean, crazy to think, but, you know, it's already hard enough to win seven. It's going to be even harder to win eight. I mean, the only way that's going to happen is if Max Verstappen stays with the best team on the grid for as long as he can. I mean, he could go to another team, but no matter how much talent he has in his fingertips, you know, it's not going to matter if he's not in the best car. I mean, he might be able to get podium finishes, but he's not going to be able to contend for wins, sans rain or differing strategies. Just a brilliant strategy or something. Because thanks to a blistering qualifying lap or something like that, it would be really hard. So again, it depends on things. It kind of depends. But how about you, Josh? What do you think?
Just a side note here, Rob. Max Verstappen is 25 and has 3 world championships. How many world championships do you think Lewis Hamilton had at 25?
When did Hamilton come in? How old was he during his rookie season?
Well, that gives it away.
That's why I'm asking. I don't know. I don't know how old he was during.
Well,
his
give
rookie
it
season.
That gives it away. He had one at 25. He had one at 25.
Okay.
Well,
think about how young Vettel was.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happened?
And then he won
advantage.
Four.
Yeah. Red Bull lost its advantage. Ferrari didn't have the advantage that Vettel thought they were going to have, and he didn't win another title.
Yeah,
thought he was going to do that. Everybody thought he was going to go on because he was so young.
Yeah, I think I'm going to downshift because I think Max is going to get burnout. I think he's going to get burnt out. I believe Red Bull will have the upper hand for a few more years. And then once they lose that upper hand and he's not winning every week and he's having to work at it, the season becomes a lot longer when you aren't winning. The dude won 19 times this year. There was a lot of Sunday drives. And Max has basically been racing every day of his life since he was able to walk. Burnout is eventually going to settle in. And I think burnout will settle in a lot quicker once that advantage goes away. So I think he'll retire like a 5 or 6 time world champion. And that might be maybe a really, really bold take. And I realize that, but a 24 race calendar is a lot easier to put up with when you're winning 20 times in the world championship. When you're only winning 3 times and you're getting 15 podiums, It's not as fun. So that's just my take on it. I think that might be a really bold statement. I think he can do it. I think if he stays with, I think he actually, like you, it depends, but it all depends. Everything, a question we answer on here just depends on something. But if it were to stay that like this for another 10 years, Max Verstappen is a 13-time world champion because he's that great of a talent. He's that good, right? Or if he just follows the lucky dice to teams that are going to be good, he will be. But I'm going to downshift. I think eventually just it won't happen. I just don't think it will happen. Max Verstappen will break his own laps lead record of 1,003 laps in 2024. Do you upshift or downshift, Rob?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially that's an easy upshift for me. That's probably going to happen. That I can see happen. Yeah. Like I said, unless something crazy happens with the Red Bull next year and it's not as competitive, which we'll see, but I don't foresee that happening. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to happen 100%. I don't see him slowing down. And according to Lewis Hamilton, he fears that Red Bull hasn't been developing this car since August, which only can hint that they've been concentrating on their 2024 car, which, I mean, sharks and blood's in the water right there, folks, already.
Yep.
I mean, if that's the case, I would have been telling Mercedes, drop what we're doing with this car, focus on 24. So, yeah, that's an easy one for me, especially with two more races. I mean, you know, as long as he stays healthy, yeah, 1,003 laps is going to become 1,103.
Yeah, probably.
For sure. All right, next one here. Expanding into MotoGP would be a step too far at this time for Trackhouse. Do you upshift or downshift, Rob?
I downshift. No, it's not a step too far because Trackhouse is more of a brand, right? Trackhouse is more of a brand. So the idea is building your brand, okay? And that's the genius part that what Justin Marks and Pitbull have got going here is the fact that Trackhouse is a brand more than it is a race team. And so the fact that they're able to sell their brand to different and expand in that way, I think it's good. I mean, this is a much Trackhouse. This is gonna sound crazy. This is gonna sound crazy. You're gonna look at me and you're gonna be like, "What are you talking about?" But just think about this for a minute.
Try me.
Trackhouse is a much more successful version of Rick Ware Racing, where it's all more about the brand. It's about developing this brand, and Rick Ware Racing, for what it's worth, has been very small. It's not like Rick Ware has an investor like Pitbull. Right. But it's kind of the same idea where, you know, they have a brand that they kind of shop around in different motorsports. And that's why they're able to have a hand in so many different motorsports. And I don't think especially for Trackhouse, I think this is more of a good move than it would be a bad move. You know, again, it's an additional revenue stream for them, especially, you know, when you think about it, you know, you're talking about expansion, right? With Trackhouse, they've got they think about IndyCar, you know, they think about it, they thought about it, right? But you know, MotoGP, to get into a major, you know, a major world global motorsport, I mean, that's kind of a big deal, and that's an opportunity that I think if you're Justin Marks, you don't want to you shouldn't turn down. Because MotoGP does have a very hardcore audience. And I think if you can appeal to that hardcore audience and kind of bring your NASCAR audience over here into MotoGP and kind of bring some of those MotoGP fans even over into NASCAR, I think it just works out great. Because, again, traditionally, I'm not going to say that two-wheeled fans and four-wheeled fans have always gotten along, okay? There's a lot of things the racing community comes together on, but there's one thing. It's that usually the people who really, really like two-wheeled cars really, really like two-wheeled machines, and they don't really care for the four-wheeled vehicles, right? And vice versa. Vice versa in some cases, all right? Be honest. But there's room, you know? Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't hate the idea of e-scooter racing. I don't. And I'll tell you this why, Josh, because if you've ever ridden an e-scooter, those things are no, fast.
No, but I want them at the summer shootout next year as a like mid-race show, because around the quarter mile there, because that would be freaking fun.
It might not be fun, quote unquote, to watch, but imagine doing it.
Yeah.
That's so fun. Come on. I think it's okay to expand, you know, your tastes and expand into other forms of motorsport, especially with what Justin Marks and Pitbull clearly want to do with this brand. That's part of their brand. That's what they want to do. They're about racing, and they're about, you know, doing this racing thing, and that's what they're going to do. So for my opinion, I say all for them. Good for them. I downshift. This is not a step too far.
I echo everything you said. I'm just going to add, that I don't see them doing this and not using people who are already there to run the show, you know, and are running people who are familiar with MotoGP. Justin Marks is too smart to try to, you know, spread the NASCAR leadership then on something that they're not familiar with, right? And growing the brand and everything like that is absolutely part of their goal. You know, this is an organization that wants to be based out of Nashville and have an office space that you can tour on Broadway and then go outside of town to the main shop and tour there. I mean, they have a vision in mind, and I think it's why they're the rogue brand in NASCAR, and why the establishment doesn't like them, because they're doing things differently, and but they're doing things that the establishment should have been doing a long time ago. Next one here, Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott wins the 2023 NASCAR Cup Series Most Popular Driver Award. Do you upshift or downshift, Rob?
I downshift. I don't think he's going to win it this year. I mean, I kind of alluded to the fact that I think he does, but look, I feel like fans do like him. A lot of fans, especially Bill Elliott fans, especially people from, you know, Dawsonville, people who've liked him since he was, you know,
he got booed in Atlanta.
Oh, he did?
Uh-huh.
Are you for real?
For real. I mean, he didn't get like Bubba Wallace level booed, but there were boos.
People shouldn't boo Bubba Wallace, didn't do. Boo Bubba Wallace because he wrecked Kyle Larson. Don't boo Bubba Wallace for any other reason, man. But I don't know. Let me look. I gotta look at who are the. Let me see.
It's Ryan Blaney, Ross Chastain.
I think in my opinion, you have to go. Larson, Blaney, and Chastain definitely are far more likely, given their likability, especially with Chastain's done. People just seem to genuinely like Chastain. Like his win, you know, at Nashville, then his win at Phoenix. Like, I feel like people were just really thrilled for him. You know, people are genuinely happy that when he wins. So I feel like he's got to be up there. And then Ryan Blaney, you know, is the wins and everything, the championship. I think that should help push him over the edge. It wouldn't surprise me if Chase Elliott ends up winning it, but I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say he doesn't.
I mean, I'm right there with you. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins, but this is where, like, you wish you could see the numbers, right? Like, how close was this? I'm in belief that Ryan Blaney or Ross Chastain will be the most popular driver this year. Both have the momentum, but Ryan has larger momentum on his side right here. I mean, Ryan Blaney's always been pulling the mom crowd. There's that. And Ross Chastain, I think, I know this is probably a stretch, but the way he's raced his self to cup, you know, spending years in Xfinity and truck, right, until he got the opportunities to get to drive cup full time, you know, first with Spire, doing most of the season, if not all the season, with Spire, and racing. I think that was the year he raced all three series like a lot. or it was a year before when he was with Premium or something. I can't remember. He's raced a lot. He raced his way too cup, right? I know he comes from a little bit of money. He's got money, but he didn't write a check. He doesn't have name power behind him. His dad's not Bill Elliott. His dad's not Dale Earnhardt Sr. But I think that resonates with people in some of the older fan base and some of the newer fan base like you and me, Rob, that we appreciate the guy who drove up to the front. You know, he drove his way there. It's not like Dale Earnhardt, but I think it's as close to Dale Earnhardt as you're going to get today, given that someone like, you know, Dale Earnhardt would never be in Cup today, just based off of personality and the way they carry themselves. So I think that's what, and Chase Elliott, I was at Atlanta last year for the first time in July in 2022, and there was a lot of Chase fans, absolutely, a lot of Chase fans there. Fast forward 1 year, there's not as many Chase fans in the stands, and I know I don't say like, yeah, he was injured for seven races, or he was out for seven races, injured for six, and suspended for a seventh. But what's Chase done for the sport lately? Not a whole lot. Ross and Brian Blaney have done a lot more, and I think that's resonating with people. So, 2023, I think he gets dethroned. I really do. Next one here. Logan Sargeant returns to Williams in 2024. Do you upshift or downshift this, Rob?
This might be kind of controversial, but I am going to upshift this. I do not personally think that Williams should release him just yet, and this is me maybe being, I don't know, I wouldn't call it biased, but I maybe looking through rose-colored glasses, I don't know. I just feel like Logan is a much better driver than he showed this year, and he definitely showed a lot of flashes of speed, especially later in the season. So I don't necessarily think that he's undeserving of a second season. The question is, how much does Williams still want an American driver racing for them, and how much is whatever sponsor he has going to continue to pay? That's going to be the biggest questions. But again, the thing that's most important is, where was he stacking up against Albon? You know, was he right next to Albon? Was he ahead? Was he behind? You know, how close was he to Albon? And sometimes he was far behind him, but for the most part, they were, like, pretty even, right? I mean, usually Albon was ahead, but that's to be expected. Albon is a veteran. Logan is a rookie. If Logan's not behind him, I mean, that's crazy. And again, I think I saw someone talk about it on Twitter, saying that I feel like people have been just so... They've had their idea of what a rookie is and does so warped by rookie seasons from Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, who, in all honesty, are generational talents.
Yeah.
Okay? In the same regard as Max Verstappen, generational talent. Is Logan Sargeant a generational talent? No. Neither is Oscar Piastri. Okay? But look at what he's done in his rookie season. But he's had a much better car. And he had to wait. You know, Logan, straight from F2 into F1, Piastri takes him a while, you know. It's also about the people that are around him. You know, who's got around him? Where's Williams? Where's Williams on the grid? You know, they're not up top like McLaren is. They're not in that top three, top four, top five of the grid like McLaren is. They're further down, you know, and that's just a fact. My point is, I just don't think Logan is going to get cut. I really feel like the people at Williams are going to look at this objectively, and look at who's on the market. I mean, yeah, you could have Tao Pulcher, who won the title. There's nice, good F2 drivers to choose from, but do you want to just replace one rookie with another? You know, or do you go out and get a free agent? Well, who's going to be a free agent? I don't know. What free agent is going to want to go to Williams? I just think Logan's their best chance right now. At least give him a second year. I mean, hell, Mick Schumacher got a second year I think Logan can get a second year too.
In general, I think 1 year sometimes is not enough to demonstrate what you can do, especially if you're in a team that's on the lower half of the grid. It just takes a while to get adjusted, right? You know, it's hard to make a judgment, I think, in such a short time. I like what James Vols has said in the last couple months. I think he's very supportive of Logan. I think he's admitted that Williams hasn't given him everything that he's needed, but they've progressed a lot, and they finished seventh in the constructors this year. I mean, that's a huge difference compared to what they did a year ago. I think for me, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't come back. Because I think the other part is that Williams has to shore up on the financial side. They've got to have that. They got to have the money as well. Again, I don't know what some other free agents could be bringing money, what their money situation is like, or if another team says, "Hey, we'll buy that seat from you and we'll lease out our driver to you," kind of deal. I don't know. I think the chances at this point in time, my gut tells me the chances are more than 50% that he will return. But the not return is in the 40s. So it's kind of a coin toss. And I hate to say that because, in general, again, I believe he deserves like a shot. It's like Nick DeVries. It's hard to, if you're in a crap car, it's hard for a rookie to tell you what he needs because he's in a crap car. You can't develop a crap car. It's just the way it is. You're better off. If you are so low in points, it's not like being ninth and being 20 points away from fourth, right? If you're ninth in constructors' points and you're 150 points off from fifth or sixth, it's time to throw in the towel and move on to next year and just develop the car enough that you just maintain where you are, right? Or fight within your own weight class. Nick DeVries deserves another shot. He deserved 2 years. Every rookie deserves 2 years, right? Unless you were just so awful. Like, you missed expectations. And I would not often put, I would only put that in people who are in, like, a Mercedes, a Red Bull, a Ferrari. You know, these teams that are always performing well. McLaren this year, Oscar Piastri. If Oscar Piastri continued to perform at the level that he was at when McLaren was running at the beginning of the year, in race 1 and 2, in race 21 and 22, that would be a problem. But he didn't. His performances improved with the car. And I would argue that Logan's performances over the course of the year improved, despite the car not being as great as it needed to be. So, again, I upshift. It's a very soft one, and it's like a 50%, 55% upshift here. So, I hope he comes back. I hope James Vols gives him another shot. And James Vols isn't forced to cut him for powers outside or for powers outside of his control, you know. We'll see. Next one here, SRX will go to Stafford Motor Speedway once again in 2024, opening up the season for the fourth straight year. Do you upshift or downshift?
Well, I mean, I don't hate that they're going to Stafford. I feel like the people at Stafford Speedway is a great track. I have no real problem, and especially up in the Northeast, it's an important place. You know, it's an important part, and it's an important thing for SRX to do. So I don't necessarily disagree with them going to Stafford again. It's not a bad track. It's a good track. It's got draws a good crowd. So I personally can't downshift. I mean, it's not a bad thing to have the same track open the season every year. It kind of gives, you know, it kind of gives it a tradition feel, you know, and now with SRX, you know, this is going to be the fourth year of it, you know, so I don't necessarily dislike that. I don't mind it. I would have to say I will upshift that. I think it's a good thing.
Rob, I'm going to disagree. I'm going to downshift.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
You know, again, I agree. Stafford North Speedway puts on great racing. It puts on great racing. But I think part of the hope I thought SRX would give us was that, you know, we're going to mix things up for the most part every year. You know, we're going to change it around. We're going to go to different places. We're going to Stafford again? That doesn't excite me. That doesn't excite me for this season. I hate to say that. That's part of what I liked about from season one to season two. Yeah, there's a couple things the same, but we changed a few things up. I'm looking forward to watching it to see who they get and the NASCAR drivers that they're going to get this year and see who runs all of it from a, you know, like a Ryan Newman kind of deal, or Bobby Labonte and Michael Waltrip, whoever it is, Tony Stewart and Marco, whoever. But when we're going to the same tracks, it's kind of hard for me to get excited about it. And that's where, like, as once they, it's like, it was like we talked about a few weeks ago, once they unveiled the first track, I'm like, well, we're not going to the West Coast. There's no way we're going to the West Coast at all. And I knew we obviously were going to go to the Thunderbolt because they were promised to have a makeup date after the floods last year in Vermont. That's fine, but we couldn't have got a couple races on the West Coast, or spent the other five out there, or just gone to other tracks on the eastern half of the United States that hadn't seen one. It's cool we're going back to the Slinger, because I don't think we've been there since season one. Or maybe they went there in season two. That's fine. That's cool. But Stafford for a fourth time. Again, I'm not knocking the people at Stafford. I'm not knocking the fans at Stafford. I'm not knocking the fans in the Northeast. But this is like an all-star. It's supposed to be an all-star type deal. Sharing the love. Going to different tracks. It's getting a little, for what the series is designed to do, it's getting a little bland for me. It's getting a little bland. And I hate to say that, but it is. It's getting a little bland. So, again, sorry if that's controversial there, anybody. And I know that goes against what you said, Rob, but it's just, this series for six races a year needs to have shakeups every year. And one track being on here, every single one, is not a shakeup. So, sorry. Not sorry, Reese's. Next question here. NASCAR president Steve Phelps admitted that NASCAR lost a, quote, ton of money on the Chicago Street Race in 2023. Do you upshift or downshift?
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? That's what happens when you do something, you do a new thing. You're gonna take a loss on it. You can't. The first time you do anything, especially in any kind of business or in any kind of event planning promotion, you have to know you're gonna take a loss on it. Okay, most of the time you're gonna incur a loss. Okay, because you're trying to get people to come and go and do things and get it all up to go, and you don't have, you know, you have the capital or what have you, but you know, it's not like you're going to make it all back, because this is more about the exposure. This is more about trying to get people to come to, you know, your event, your business, what have you. So, no, I expected it to lose money. I mean, anybody who didn't expect it to lose money kind of doesn't understand how business works. I mean, the only way the Chicago Street Course is going to make money is if NASCAR does it for the next 3 years, 3, 4, 5 years. You know, then it can start turning a profit, because then you can start, you know, building in a very solid group of people that really want a solid customer base, solid fan base in that area that's willing to come out and say, yeah, I'll I'll hang out here in Chicago. I mean, it's coming to a major metropolitan area. Nobody, and it's not like it's in a far off area. It's not, it's far away from the heart of the city. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's very much in the heart of Chicago. So again, it's okay that it takes a loss. It's okay that it incurs a loss. It's all about, you know, trying to make the event an event, a true event, something that people want to come and do and see. And I think that's what NASCAR's got going on for it right now. So no, fine with me. No major issues whatsoever. I'm gonna have to go ahead and just upshift it.
I mean, I'm hoping the Fontana money was well spent, because that's where a lot of that money went. But the first thing that they could also solve to maybe turn that into NASCAR lost a ton of money to NASCAR lost money is just find a race sponsor. That's your first solution right there. And actually finding a sponsor for the event, you know, just like you do every other race. But, I mean, look, I agree. You know, this, I'm just glad NASCAR took a shot at something and they lost money on it. You know, that's the biggest thing, I think, and I think sometimes in NASCAR today is that we're afraid to do something to lose money when it's just like any small business. No one, most people who start a business in this country do not write themselves a check for 3 years, right? You're putting everything back into that business for 3 years. I never expected them to make money on this. In fact, I think it could have gone completely to plan and they were going to lose money. So, well, that's not even weather dependent on it. I think they need to find a way to get as many people there as possible. You know, it's just sad when you replace that with a race that was bringing in 100,000 people to with one that you were proud to say that you were expecting 50,000. You know, let's try to find ways to just grow it and keep it going in the right direction and keep fans. And when it's the race leaves Chicago, which it inevitably will, which I don't think it will return in 25. If you replace that with a race in Denver or a race in Seattle, that it is, you know, you are on the ground. You know what you're doing with this type of event. Because in NASCAR, this is a very unique event. And in many cases, it will be the same. It doesn't matter if you're running the streets of New Orleans or Denver, Seattle, streets of wherever, Tampa. You're going to be the same. You're going to be facing the same challenges or very similar challenges. So I don't downshift this either. I think he said the most open secret probably of the season. That Chicago lost money. I didn't have to go to that NASCAR board meeting to figure that one out. So, all right, two more to go here. Sergio Perez has been given a formal warning for calling the stewards, quote, a joke for his penalty during the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Do you upshift or downshift this, Rob?
Oh, boy. Well, this is a hard one. At least for me, because on the one hand, drivers should be able to express themselves, but on the other hand, you do have to be careful of who you call names, you know, especially people in high up positions. So if you want my honest opinion, I don't really have a take on this. I'm very neutral on this. I am going to be neutral on this because on the one hand, I agree with Checo. But on the other hand, if you're going to call your boss a joke, or the people, or, you know, if you're going to, I guess in this case it would be the police, whatever. If you're going to just go up to the police and call them a joke, I mean, don't be surprised when they start beating you. You know, it's, I don't know what to tell you. It's what happens. So, yeah, very neutral. Neutral.
Well, sporting is always a little bit different than in actuality. And in reality, to the stewards. Can't take the heat, stay out of the kitchen. Right? The reality is the stewards for the past several years in Formula One have been making joke calls. Eventually, you're going to get called a joke. And that was Sergio Perez, who called you a joke on the radio. Don't trust me, they've been called a joke before. They've probably been called a joke to their face. But because it wasn't on public radio, they didn't do anything about it. Now this was on public radio. A driver is expressing his frustration for getting a 5-second time penalty for, honestly, that was a bullcrap penalty. Didn't agree with it at all. And you get mad. They got butt hurt, Rob. They got butt hurt. You can't take the heat. Stay out of the kitchen. Seriously. This is why I love NASCAR. Denny Hamlin can get on the radio and go, "That's a joke, NASCAR. Seriously? I didn't speed on pit road. There's no way." Nothing happens. But and this is why sometimes it's frustrating as an American, and I understand America, we just give the middle finger to a lot of things Europe does. And this is one of those things where, like, they take it too gentlemanly. It's a proper sport, you know? No, you're bare knuckle boxing out there, and you're Americanizing yourself with 3 races a year. Why don't you adopt a little bit of the American style and just take a joke? I'm granting on here, but I'm fully on Sergio's side on this one. Both from a, I can't believe he was given a formal warning. I mean, Rob, look at me. This is what they did. Don't do that. Wagging your finger. Don't do that. And it was a joke call. So, I mean, yeah. I guess in general, I downshift this. It was a joke call, and the formal warning gets a downshift. So, yeah. Stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. All right. Final question here. Lewis Hamilton and Red Bull here. Do you upshift or downshift that Lewis Hamilton was the first that reached out regarding a drive at Red Bull Racing?
Look, man, it's if you're a driver, you're always looking what's in your best interest, okay? Especially in Formula One, you're always trying to get one step ahead. This is no different than Ayrton Senna moving from McLaren to Williams because Williams had an advantage traction control. It's no different than that. Why do you think Senna did that? Because he knew he wasn't going to beat the Williams, so you can't beat him, join him.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis Hamilton probably thought the same thing. Well, are we going to be able to beat these Red Bulls? Well, if we can't beat them, I might as well join them. See if they want me. But then again, you got to wonder. It's like, do you really want to race Max Verstappen one-on-one, head-to-head? You know, and probably if you're Lewis Hamilton and Christian Horner, for that matter, you probably stop and think to yourself, maybe it's not a good idea to have these guys be teammates.
It's not good to have two guys like that in the same team.
That's why Checo's such a good, perfect teammate. He's such a perfect addition there. He's not going to overshadow Max.
He knows that Max is the A driver. He can be a good AB. Yes. Right? He can be a good AB.
Yeah. You can't have two number one drivers. And McLaren learned that the hard way in 2007 when they had in all honesty, in what universe were they going to expect Lewis Hamilton to be number one driver capable in his rookie year?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, but looking back on it historically, you know, like when I look back on it and I'm like, man, Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso, man, that must have been a complete, you know, that must have been a killer lineup. And it's like, it was and it wasn't. You know what I mean? It was and it also wasn't. So, you know, it's fine. I don't care if Lewis Hamilton was the one who reached out first. Doesn't matter to me. If that's the case, great. Like I said, Hamilton's looking. That means he's still competitive. That means he's still trying to get ahead. That still means he still wants to compete and win. I see that as a good thing. So I'm upshifting.
Ooh. I'm going to downshift because I think this is Christian Horner playing games.
Oh.
I think this is Christian Horner playing games. I believe that at one point, Lewis Hamilton did reach out to Red Bull. But I don't think it was as recently as they're saying it, as he's saying it was. I think this is him just trying to poke the Toto Wolff bear. I think this is him just trying to poke Mercedes. You know? Him trying to keep something else talking in the media. I think this is just him simply playing games. 100%. So I downshift. I don't think it was Lewis Hamilton that reached out first. And you know what? I don't think it may have been either of them reaching out. Christian Horner could just woke up that morning like, I choose violence. I'm going to sit over there and choose to tell the media, hey, guess who talked to me this week? Yeah. Have you seen the texts? Until I see the texts, show me the texts.
You want the receipts is what you want.
I want the receipts. So, for this, I downshift. Again, I just think it's Christian Horner playing games. And I'm here for it. It'll make Netflix a little bit more interesting come February. Yeah. All right, Rob, weekend wrap up. Wrap it up. Put a bow on it.
Yeah, we're taking a look at what happened in the weekend wrap-up in Supercars. The Adelaide 500 was a fantastic race, and I hope I never hear the word parody again because Ford swept the weekend. Cam Waters won race number one in the Ken Block tribute car. Beautiful. Nice. Even changed the number to 43 and everything. Just simply, mwah, chef's kiss. Incredible.
That's
it was
your new favorite line right now, Rob. That is your new favorite line.
Yeah, I don't care. I've been saying chef's kiss for a while. But no, seriously, it was really cool to see that. And then in race two, Matt Payne got his first ever win at the same place. He got his Supercars start. So he got in his first rookie season here. He's won the Adelaide 500. So very happy for him. Very cool. And then Brody Kostecki, I already mentioned earlier, he won the title, the championship. Because Shane Van Gisbergen just had, quite honestly, a terrible... Well, he had a terrible, terrible go of it in his final round as a full-time Supercars driver. So,
rough.
Yeah.
Rough.
And then we're going to talk about Formula 2 in Abu Dhabi. We're going to go to race number one, Frederick Vesti won. Then race number two, Jack Doohan, with Teo Pulcher winning the 2023 title. And then Max Verstappen, of course, won Abu Dhabi. Okay. Who didn't see that coming? All right, Josh. Outstanding performance. Who you got?
I am going to sort of give mine to McLaren. You know, this is more of an over the whole season outstanding performance. Where, I mean, it was worrisome. I'm like, holy crap. Are they going to finish 10th in the Constructors' Championship, McLaren? Whew. They drove back up to 4th though. Got back up to 4th, and it makes you wonder, you know, could they have finished 2nd this year if they had started the season like they finished it? I think it would have been and it makes you wonder, like, okay, if they can start the season off like this and carry it through 2024, it's going to be interesting to be watching 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and 5th if Aston Martin can get their act together. It's going to be very interesting to watch. I mean, that to me, I think Red Bull next year is going to walk over everyone once again. So I think really the interesting part of these Grand Prix is just going to be the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th battle. And hopefully that includes McLaren and Ferrari alongside, you know, Mercedes. And again, hopefully it's Aston Martin too. Hopefully it's a good 2nd through 4th fight. So McLaren, overall outstanding performance this entire overarching year. Formula 1 just didn't give up. Never give up attitude. And I think that's just that's a great attitude and personality trait to have in life in general.
Right on. So I'm going to go ahead and give mine just straight up to Matt Payne, because that was a really, really good race that he ran there to finish the Supercar season, score his first Supercars win. It was very hard fought, and it was very, very well done for him, because he had a lot of he had a lot of tough opponents out there and pit strategy and the way everything was going. So, yeah, ultimately I've got to go ahead and give my outstanding performance to Matt Payne. And finally, I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to you, Josh, for Roller's featured season, talking about a very fun season.
Yeah, we I kind of did this one a little bit off random here, deliberately picked in a way, in some ways, others it was quite random. Brendan Gaughan, how many of you know this, is a two-time NASCAR champion. He's a two-time NASCAR champion. Rob, I know, knew that, but listener, do you? They both came in the Winston West Series, and the first coming in the 2000 season. And that season started in March and concluded in November, spanning a total of 12 races. Race 1 was at Phoenix, won by Kevin Richards. Then Brendan Gaughan scored the win in Race 2 at Mesa Marin, RIP. David Starr won on the Las Vegas Motor Speedway's mile-and-a-half track. Not the bull ring like they do today with the West Series, the mile-and-a-half track in Race 3. This is back when Winston West just was basically, you know, running everything. It was great. This is what it should be today, and it sadly is not. So David Starr won that race. Race 4 was at California Speedway, won by Pontiac driver Johnny Benson. That's right. Laguna Seca, yes, has hosted stock car racing, and it came in the 2000 NASCAR Winston West Series, and maybe a couple other seasons as well. I didn't really look that up. But it was Race 5. Bobby Dotter won that one. Dotter backed up the Race 5 victory with a victory in Race 6 at Irwindale. And then the lost Portland Speedway, the half-mile asphalt oval, RIP again. Race 7 won by Jeff Jefferson.
Jeff Jefferson on his roof.
Jeff Jefferson. Brendan Gaughan won Race 8 at Evergreen. And a second trip to Irwindale was Race 9, won by Joe Bean. Rocky Mountain Raceways in West Valley City, Utah was Race 10. Bobby Dotter was victorious there. Mesa Marin, penultimate race of the season, second trip to the track. Eric Norris was the victor. And then in the 12th and final race of the season, a third trip to Irwindale, Bobby Dotter was victorious there as well. Gaughan may have only won twice, but he scored 11 top 10 finishes compared to Dotter's 9, and beat him by 164 points in the championship, and I believe had 4 more lead lap finishes than Dotter did this year as well. And that helped elevate him to score his first NASCAR Winston West Series championship. And great, good, shorter season. Then it's other seasons surrounding the 2000 year, much like the IRL was a shorter season in 2002. Must have been something in the air that year. But man, just looking back at these old Winston West schedules in the 90s and early 2000s, just make you just cry a little bit. The tracks and the racing that was going on as well, and makes you yearn for those old days, and unfortunately they are gone. They aren't coming back, sadly. So, what's in the windshield? Well, hey, that's it. That's it. That's all, folks. Right? That's all, folks. That's all she wrote.
Season, but not. We're not going anywhere. We're just taking a break.
Yeah, just taking a break. We're going to take probably about a month off. May do an appearance. In the next couple weeks, we'll see. But we will be back, and we will drop our New Year's special late December, early January. So be on the lookout for there. Included will be our Way Too Early predictions, the Robin Roller Awards, Let's Make a Southern California Race Schedule, which I've already started earlier tonight. I started the rundown on this. For this particular show, and I was typing out some tracks here, and my goodness, talk about a mix of eras. This is going to be a total fantasy schedule. This might be even more fantasy schedule than the one we did a few weeks ago, where we made a list of tracks that no longer exist to make a NASCAR Cup calendar schedule. It's going to be brilliant. This is going to be a lot of fun. But we're also introducing a new segment for the New Year's special,
The one thing I would change. And we're going to do this for three divisions of racing, Formula One, IndyCar, and NASCAR. The one thing I would change. And this is going to be challenging for a couple of those, if not all three. But I'm interested to see what I come up with and what I finally decide on. And I'm really interested to see what Rob comes up with. Because I know when I told about this earlier, I could already see the gears in his mind turning and the smoke coming out. It's too much to process on which one to pick. So, but it's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. Again, that will drop late December, early January. Well, that depends on when Rob and I record it, and I will be home in Indiana during the late December month, so we might be able to record it during that time. And again, it just depends on when we record it. But just be on the lookout. We will be posting it again. So, conclusion, rolling right in here, and skip a little bit ahead. Subscribe and hit the notification button on your preferred podcast listening platform, and you'll be alerted. You'll get that little notification, that little bubble at the top of your phone saying, "Hey, Robin Roller just dropped. Listen to it." All right? That's how that notification works. I'm talking like I'm 75, and this is something I just learned, and no one knows it, but that's how it works, folks. So subscribe, turn the notifications on. Let us know what you think about this show. What's your favorite Toyota scheme from this year in the Cup Series? As we say goodbye to this Toyota body and we move on to a new one. I mean, you're going to have a new Ford body next year too. Maybe for our New Year special, we'll do our favorite Ford scheme. Who knows? If I can remember that, if I write it down, we'll see. So thank you for listening again. We appreciate it. Rob was going over some of the numbers before the show. We're seeing another year of growth, and we appreciate that from all of you, the loyal listeners of the show, the ones who are coming back, the ones who are word of mouth telling everyone about how great it is, and those of you who are finding us when you're just simply searching motorsports. So thank you for listening. Hopefully you are enjoying what you're hearing, and it's making you want to come back and listen to more to see what hot takes Rob or Roller says this week. Or just, you know, listening to, in general, a different point of view. Because we certainly had different points of views compared to other people talking about Formula One and IndyCar and NASCAR. So, Twitter, well, X. It's X now.
Whatever.
X, the artist formerly known as Twitter. Rob is at rpeters33. That's R-P-E-E-T-E-R-S 33. I'm at roller underscore 01, R-O-L-L-E-R underscore 01, and the show's at Robin Roller, just as it sounds, RobinRoller. So that's it, folks. That's it for the regular season of 2023. Going to take a few weeks off here. Again, we might come back, but again, you hit that subscribe notification button, you will know when we drop the next episode. So for Rob Peters, I'm Josh Roller, and this has been the Racing with Robin Roller podcast. Have a great start to your December, everybody, and we'll see you here in a few weeks.